Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fluent Edge podcast, the show where globally minded professionals learn to speak with clarity, lead with confidence, and thrive across cultures. I'm your host, Sean Watson, business English coach and lifelong learner. If you missed last week's episode, I was the one in the guest seat and Howie interviewed me about my journey from opera to English coaching and what it really means to teach communication across cultures. So if you haven't heard that one yet, definitely check it out. It sets the stage for what we're diving into today. So today I'm in conversation with my co-host, Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is a candid exploration of what it really takes to change as a leader, as a communicator, and as a human being, of course. Howie is a mindset and leadership coach with decades of experience helping executives, entrepreneurs, and creatives unlock their potential. And today we're digging in instead of diving in. We're digging in. So with no further ado, hello, Howie.
Hello, Sean. Happy to be here.
Great. I think we should just dive right in or drive right in or drive right through. So let's do this.
Okay.
So what is a belief about leadership or behavior change that you think is totally overrated or maybe even outdated or just plain wrong?
I was thinking about this, and it's a wonderful question because it's a great opportunity for me to show that I'm a different kind of thinker. And honestly, what I came up with was, I think most of them are right. I think pretty much we understand what leadership is. We understand how change happens. And I think the problem is we don't trust those things enough. So, you know, if leadership is really about clear communication, inspiring people with a vision, being humble and being willing to learn from other people, being open, there's nothing new there. If I just wrote an article about that on LinkedIn, people might not even read it because it's boring. And
okay,
right? And if I said, you know, that change is about, first of all, making a commitment, creating a plan, taking small actions, being open to feedback, being accountable. Again, there's nothing exciting or interesting about any of that. And because it's not exciting and interesting, people like me have to try to make it more exciting and interesting. And I think by getting away from the fundamentals, we end up confusing people and we end up creating programs and writing books that are unnecessarily complicated. So businesses are always looking for what's the new thing in leadership, right? Well, that thing didn't work. Or we wanted to change all these people to shift to a new system or to a new app or to a new way of communicating or to a new organizational structure, and they didn't do it. So we need a new system, a new way, instead of saying, let's just make sure that the basics, the fundamentals that we know work are in place.
Okay. So you've worked with everyone, I guess, from executives to athletes. What's the first thing you look for when someone says, I want to grow as a leader or as a person? Where do you go with that?
Yeah, the first thing I want to know is, why? What impact do you want to have that you're not having now? You know, we live in a culture in which individual achievement and status and success and wealth creation. So I've worked with lots of entrepreneurs. And of course, the game of entrepreneurship is you create something of great value and then you harvest some of that value for yourself. I've never successfully worked with someone for whom that was the goal. Right. Where this, okay, I want to create impact on the world. I want to make the world a better place. I want to grow myself, grow my consciousness, grow my capacity, understand myself better. And in order to do that, I have to play a game. And the game might be entrepreneurship. It might be climbing the corporate ladder. It might be creating a nonprofit. It might be being an advisor. But we're looking for, where is there a thing that I can't quite do yet that I have to grow in order to be able to do? And those are the people that I really enjoy working with.
Fantastic. Okay. Can you take us back to a moment when maybe you hit a personal wall professionally and had to apply your own coaching tools to move forward?
Yeah. I mean, every day. Right?
Okay.
Life is not easy, right? So 2 years ago, my family and I moved from the U.S. to Spain. And here I am trying to figure out how to navigate a new culture. I'm trying to figure out how to grow a business in a new country, in a new business environment. And the second half of your question is applying my own coaching techniques to myself. One of the things that I discovered is, so I'll just take you back a second. I co-wrote a book in 2021 called You Can Change Other People. I am not fond of the title. I was at the time. As soon as it came out, I thought, it's like, you know, like who would want to walk around holding that book, walking down? If you saw someone walking down a plane aisle holding that book, you'd think, what a jerk, right? The book is essentially how to help other people be their best, how to bring out the best in other people. And it's a really good book, if I say so myself. And it's got all these techniques. And so one of the things I thought was, well, I can use this on myself. And one of the things I realized is it's really hard to use that on myself. So one of the things that I do is I reach out to other people for support, for coaching. There's something about the interbeing, about people being in it together, that is much more powerful than me just being such a great coach or such a great productivity guy or such a great personal development guy that I can do it myself.
Wow. Is that a little bit like the co-creator idea that people sometimes talk about in therapy, where you're sort of co-creating with somebody on their journey? Is it that kind of idea, or is that the wrong nomenclature for that?
I think it's very similar. I mean, when I talk about co-creation, one of the things I learned, I have a career in science and health. And when I started learning about the microbiome, right, all these like bacteria that live everywhere in our bodies, and there's way more of them than there is of us, right? Just in terms of the number of cells, like we're mostly not even ourselves. And in every single one of our cells is a little organelle called a mitochondrion that has its own DNA, and it's basically the powerhouse of the cell. It turns out scientists think that those are bacteria that a long time ago, our ancestors evolved to sort of, we swallowed. Like we made a deal with them, like come live in us and be a power station for us and we'll give you everything you need and we'll move you around and we'll mate and make more of you. And the mitochondria said, sounds good. So in that sense, I think about everything we do as a co-creation, that there's no such thing as an individual who is not embedded in an ecosystem, in a community. And I think one of the challenges that I think people face in business is that many cultures are very individualistic. And I know we're talking to people from different cultures. And I imagine that's something that you encounter a great deal in terms of certain cultures. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease in some cultures. And I just talking to someone from Australia who was talking about the tall poppy syndrome. So the tall poppy gets cut down, right? So you don't want to stand out.
Right.
So I think that, you know, one of the challenges to figure out the balance between me as a, quote, individual and the web of relationships in which I am embedded.
So let's talk a little bit more about habits and behavioral change. So how do you help someone who knows what they should be doing, but just can't seem to get themselves to do it?
Yeah, I had changed a lot in the 25 years that I've been doing this work. At first, I took a very, I would say, structured approach, almost a very macho approach. Basically, the philosophy was just go do it, you know, like Nike, just do it.
Yep.
And it's like, don't make excuses. If it's hard, you know, you can't lift that weight. Well, then you better start, you know, lifting weights. So the challenge will help you lift the weight. And that works a lot, right? To say to someone, okay, this is a hard thing. And you're going to do it. Or if I'm trying to help someone, let's say who has been told they have a bad habit, maybe they interrupt in meetings. And it's very hard not to interrupt in the meeting to just stop doing that, right? Like a dead person can do that better than you can. Right? So simply like remind yourself, set a calendar reminder. Okay, I'm not going to interrupt. What I've come to. So and that you know, that can work. Right? Because let's say the person who's interrupting in the meeting is doing it because something's going on that they don't like, or they're not, they're not, you know, someone else is taking it off track, or they're not getting enough attention, or whatever's going on. So one of the things that we teach people is your preferences are not demands, right? You cannot like something and not have to change it. Right?
Okay.
So think about like it's raining out. I hate the rain. Okay. Well, there's nothing you can do. So just learn that your preferences don't have to turn into demands. So,
right. It's a bit like stoicism where they talk about, you know, you can't change what happens around you, but you can change how you react to what happens around you.
Right.
Basically.
So that's the way I started out. And there's a lot of value in it. In the last 5 or 6 years, I've added an entirely different element, which the business world talks about it in terms of competing commitments, which is to say, if someone wants to do something that they're not doing, there's some part of them, there's some energy in them, there's some prediction, there's some other commitment that's getting in the way. And instead of just trying, so one thing we could do, what I used to do was let's just steamroll that. Let's manage it. Let's overcome it. If this is the old habit, we're going to create a new habit that's going to compete with the old habit. And the more we do the new habit, the better it will compete and the more it will win. The trouble is, when we're under stress, the oldest habit tends to reemerge. It tends to become the default. So what I do now is I work with people to discover what is that competing commitment? What is, because it always makes sense. Someone who interrupts in meetings, we can get into what are they afraid would happen if they didn't? And it could be something like, this is going to be out of my control. The meeting is going to go in this other direction, and I'm going to end up getting blamed for it. So the interruption doesn't help. It doesn't make that better. And it actually makes it worse because now people don't respect you because you're interrupting or they're angry at you. You have lost influence because of your behavior, when what your behavior was trying to do was gain influence for a positive thing, for the good of the group. So once people can understand, oh, I'm doing this for that reason, or I'm eating this food that I don't want to eat because it helps me achieve a mood. Right? Who wants to feel sad and lonely? I come home at night and there's a pint of ice cream and I don't feel sad and lonely when I'm eating the ice cream, right?
Right.
Right. So really, really.
Wow. I can relate to that.
Me too. So to really help people understand and appreciate the competing motivations. So in the case of the person who interrupts, once their brain realizes, oh, this thing that I'm doing doesn't work, when it's made conscious and when they own it, when they say, okay, I'm doing this on purpose to achieve something. Once they can see clearly that it doesn't work, it often just disappears.
Many of our listeners are navigating global workplaces, different cultures, languages, expectations. So how can someone lead with authenticity when they feel like an outsider?
It's such a beautiful question. And what came to me was you can only lead with authenticity by being an outsider, if you're an outsider. Right? So that's the truth. So there's disadvantages to being an outsider, right? And everybody knows what they are. There's awkwardness. We don't know the rules. You know, you're walking along and all of a sudden there's an invisible wall of culture and you break your nose and you didn't realize, oh, I shouldn't have done that or said that. And it's not just someone from another country or another culture. It can happen when someone from JP Morgan Chase moves to American Express, right? Two companies a few blocks away in the same industry. So when you are an outsider, though, there's advantages. But there are advantages when you embrace it. So when you say, hey, I'm new here. I don't know how everything works. I'm really going to rely on you, my team, to help me. I'm really going to rely on you, my team, to communicate well so that I can begin to understand what you need. When you're the outsider, you get much more curious. You become much more sensitive. And everybody feels like an outsider, right?
Right. And I guess there's a certain resourcefulness, too, that comes from being an outsider. You're better at, you know, finding alternatives or finding solutions to things because you're literally outside of the box in many ways.
Yeah.
Culturally or for whatever reason.
Yeah. And if you come in as the outsider saying, okay, I'm going to change everything that's going on here, you'll lose everyone. If you come in as the outsider saying, I don't know what's going on, let's figure it out together. Then you can say, you know, I have some experience from a completely different place that I think might be interesting here. And you bring it in, not like a virus that the body has to defend itself against with antibodies. You bring it, right? Like any culture, if you come in and you try to change it too much, too rapidly, too intensively, its immune system will kick you out. So to be a smart outsider means to come in with authenticity as an outsider and to evoke that same feeling of like everyone feels like an outsider. I couldn't believe when I went to my 35th high school reunion, the cool kids were all telling stories about how they didn't feel like they fit in and what they had to do to be popular. And so being an outsider is actually a really common experience that almost all humans have. And if someone leads with that vulnerability and opens up, then everybody else gets to relax and connections can be formed.
Wow. This is awesome. Thanks so much. I had other questions as well, which I can ask in upcoming episodes. There's no reason to cover the whole universe of this topic in just a few minutes. But if people want to purchase the book that you mentioned earlier, is it available on Amazon or where can people find that book?
Yeah, I believe it's available everywhere fine books are sold.
Okay.
I'll throw it up here. You can change other people. And in terms of, I don't believe I have received any royalties for foreign language editions. So I don't think it's been translated into anything other than English. So viewers of this podcast have no excuse but to read it in English.
Excellent. So that's it for today's episode of the Fluent Edge podcast. A huge thanks again to Howie for sharing his story, his strategies, and his very real take on leadership and change. And please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel or leave us a review on your favorite podcast app and share it with a smart friend. And if you'd like to work with Howie or myself, you can find our booking links in the description below. So thanks for tuning in. I'll try that again. Thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you next week with more insights to help you lead and communicate at the next level.